Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shark, kind of a no-brainer, I would think, from the Oilers' perspective. And after listening to Ben Scrivens and I asked him about it, he felt that, you know, testing the free agent waters wouldn't have been the best thing because he wasn't guaranteed to get a better opportunity.
Yeah, well, I think he framed it nicely when he said there's not enough jobs to go around. I mean, there are really only 30 jobs out there that he's going to have a chance to grab one of them. And no guarantee that somewhere else he would have gotten as good an opportunity as he got here. So two things. It happens to be his hometown, which to him he says is a positive. And they're in need of a starting netminder here, so the opportunity is ripe. So, I mean, yeah, no-brainer. I think it makes sense. I like the dollar figure. I like the number. I think if they if he's as good as they feel he can be, it's a more than fair number. So I wonder if maybe the negotiation didn't even go a little bit smoother than Craig McTavish thought it might go, because I think it was not too long ago he was talking about needing more of a look and a bit of a longer look on Scrivens to kind of make that determination. But one game and boom, since then, and it's done.
You look at Ben Scrivens, and you know what? A lot of people have been saying, oh, he's a career backup. I don't see him as a career backup because this is only his third year in the NHL, and he only played 1 year prior to that in the American League. I think it's too early to say, which is why this contract makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's too early for him to make a case that he's a $3.5 million starting goalie, and it's too early to say that he's a career backup and that's all he deserves. It's too early to go either direction. So this is the perfect tweener deal that he's going to get lots of opportunity. It allows the Oilers to pay somebody else similar money to come in and compete with him, which Ben has to be well aware they're going to do. And you'd have to think that that's going to be good for him. Just handing him a starting role probably wouldn't necessarily be the best idea right now at this point in his career anyway. So they'll have somebody here competing with him. It's fair money. 2 years is a safe zone. This is kind of similar to the deal they put Dubnyk on a couple of years ago. Didn't they do a two-year deal with him? It was kind of a similar tweener type deal.
Well, except the difference was Dubnyk's two-year deal was $3.5 million.
Yeah, well, but he was further along in that they had a bigger body of work to look at and make the determination that they felt he was going to be their guy. This is kind of saying to Ben, we think you could be. We like what we see. We're willing to commit to you. Prove us, and we'll pay you. So this is 2 years for Ben Scrivens to prove he's a starting netminder, and then the Oilers will pony up before he hits unrestricted free agency in a year and a half, if he shows that he can do it.
Yeah, you know what? I got to go back and look at Dubnyk, because he signed that contract after he had played, I want to say, maybe 100. He might have had 100 NHL games combined.
Yeah.
Right when he got that. And we're looking right now, and I think, what's Scrivens at, about 80? So it's not much different. And but the difference was Dubnyk had been in the organization for like 9 years. That was the difference.
Yeah, they'd worked from negotiation to negotiation, entry level to the bridge deal to the next deal. And so it was a different circumstance. But I think either way you slice it, this is good. And you know what? To me, this is a good, solid check mark in the plus category of Craig McTavish's performance as the GM. I think if you look at what he did, he moved out Devin, got an asset that's usable in return, moved out a third-round pick, and is getting a look at a guy that could potentially be their starter one day. Really all it's cost them between the third-round pick and the salary that they've they've had to pay. It hasn't really cost them that much, and they've got a usable piece.
It cost them nothing. People overrate third round draft pick.
Oh, totally,
it's one of the most overrated things out there. You get a goaltender now, and you look at Scriven's numbers. No goaltender has started 20 games and has a better save percentage in the entire league than Ben Scrivens. And
his numbers are good, and even his numbers as an Oiler.
His numbers are better in Edmonton.
I know. A lot of people thought, well, that's when he was in L.A. and behind Doughty and all these guys, and, you know, one of the better teams in the league, and he can't sustain it as an Oiler. Well, he's through 7 games or so as an Oiler, and his numbers are good. His numbers are really, really good on this team as well. So well-earned by him, and the arrows are definitely pointing up. I think it's smart the Oilers got ahead of it and got this done. And to me, look, we sit here and we clobber Craig McTavish for some perceived mistakes, and fairly so, but I think you need to give him credit on this one. He ran into a problem. He moved out Dubnyk, brought back a usable asset, cost him a little bit of money, moved out a pick, brought in another chance to look at a different guy, and that appears to have paid off. So I think this was some good maneuvering and some good asset management.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Ryan, which Oilers are going to be moved before 1 o'clock on Wednesday?
Well, I think that the obvious ones to me, or the most likely ones to me, are obviously Hemsky, Ryan Smith, Nick Schultz probably goes. I don't know that they'll be able to move anybody else. I don't know that somebody's going to want to take Ilya Bryzgalov. I don't know that that'll happen. To me, those are the three obvious ones. I don't know. Does anybody else qualify as obvious to you? I mean, really beyond those three?
No, I don't think so. You know, some people are suggesting Ryan Jones, you know, and I guess it's possible.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
Right. But, you know, I know a lot of people have been speculating on Corey Potter because of the fact that he shoots right, and Detroit has all left-handed shooting defensemen, and Tom Rennie's there. So, but I'm like, is Corey Potter the only right-handed shot defenseman who's available? Like, come on.
Well, yeah, and they've needed that for a couple of years now and haven't traded for him. There was all that Potter-Detroit stuff last year as well. And so, I mean, he's been there for a while, and he's been gettable for a while. If it hasn't happened, it probably hasn't happened for a reason. So I guess we can wait and see. But I don't know that anybody's fallen down trying to get Corey Potter into their lineup.
No. Well, I would sure hope not. The Oilers are in 29th place, and he can't get into the lineup.
Yeah, and the thing about other deals, and I'd like to ask McTavish this, what the landscape is like right now, if he's getting any sense at all that there is any hockey deal to be made beyond just getting rid of unrestricted assets, if there's a chance that an actual hockey deal gets made at this deadline. I doubt it. I think that's more a deal that gets done in the summer. But I wonder if there is a deal that, you know, where you move Gagne out and you bring somebody in return and change things up a little bit, or you add a D-man, or if those deals are all deals that happen in the offseason, which is more likely.
Do you see, and speaking of deals done in the summer that are more likely, Sam Gagne's one.
Yeah.
Do you see one of the young right-wingers being moved this summer?
One of the young right wingers. We're talking Eberle Yakupov?
Yes.
Yeah. I could see Craig McTavish deviating a little bit from this notion of not dipping into his core if the right deal comes along and if the right player comes along. I think beyond Taylor, my sense is beyond Taylor Hall and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, maybe you throw Justin Schultz into that mix too, because he's unique and they don't necessarily have that type of guy in the organization. I just don't know that many guys should be untouchable and are. And I think there's been some separation this year. I think Nugent Hopkins, because he's a center, they have to be committed and keep. But I definitely think that Yakupov or Eberle, one of the two, it wouldn't surprise me if both of them were not, like if one or the other wasn't here at the start of next year. So I would say, yeah, I would say that it's a possibility, but I think that the return would have to be pretty significant. And I don't know that anybody out there values either of those players any more than the Edmonton Oilers do, and that might make a deal impossible.
When you look at teams for Alex Hemsky that are fits, you know, people have mentioned the Phoenix Coyotes as one. You know, you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, we're hearing all the rumors about them, Ryan Kesler. But if you can't get Ryan Kesler, and I know they're completely different players, play different positions, I still look at Pittsburgh's top six forwards, and they need another right winger. And if the Oilers eat half of his salary, the return's not going to be very big. I don't see why Pittsburgh wouldn't be looking at him.
Yeah, well, they have a need on the wings, right? And for all the talk about Ryan Kesler going there, I mean, Pittsburgh's big need is on the wing. I mean, Brandon Sutter's a pretty good third line center. He's not Jordan, what Jordan Staal was when they were winning a cup, but their need is on the wing, so that makes more sense. This is the thing about Hemsky, and we had a brief discussion about this today at the rink. I think there'll be a better return from a Western Conference team. I don't think that there is a ton of love out there for Alex Hemsky from Eastern Conference teams who don't necessarily have GMs that see him play as much night in, night out. You ask around about Alex Hemsky, you talk to people throughout the league, and in particular, people from the other conference, and I just don't think anybody out there sees Alex Hemsky's value more than the Oilers do. And that's why he's still an Oiler. That's the Oilers have placed way greater value on Hemsky than anybody else in the league the last few years. That's why there's always deals, and that's why he hasn't been moved. But I think a team in the West that knows him a little better, that sees him more, there's probably a better return there to be had. I think a third rounder to move him east probably gets it done, but I think you will find teams in the West that know and understand this player a little better that may be willing to cough up a little bit more for him.
Give me your surprise team at the deadline, a team that nobody's been talking about that either makes a really good acquisition or makes a trade that people aren't expecting.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I think I would maybe throw Colorado out there just because they have an unpredictable guy kind of leading the charge there in Patrick Waugh. And I know that Joe Sakic probably has to green light everything. But, I think that there's a competitiveness to Patrick Waugh. I think there's an impatience to Patrick Waugh. They're sitting third in the Central right now with some separation. So I think that maybe that's a team that could, while people think if they stand pat and give it a year or two, they'll just continue to get better. Maybe there's an impatience there. And I don't know specifically what the deal is exactly, but knowing the personalities of the guy in charge, I'll throw that out there for fun.
San Jose Sharks are the team. Doug Wilson always makes some key moves. Yep. I think Doug Wilson, the San Jose Sharks are a very good team right now. And they still have a window of opportunity, but every year gets a little bit smaller. Everybody counted them out again. They're not out at all. It's Thornton and Marlowe can still play. They've got good depth all over. I see him being the guy who likely comes out. I'll say San Jose is one of the top three teams when we're ranking them as winners on Wednesday.
Interesting. And what's the scenario with Dan Boyle?
I really don't see them trading Dan Boyle. I think they will, negotiate things. He just wants a longer-term contract. And you know what? A lot of those guys, they start their negotiations, and near the end, San Jose has done a great job, Ryan, of retaining the guys they want to retain. And I think if they really want Dan Boyle, they will keep him. I don't see them trading him now before the deadline because he's still a pretty big part of that team. So they might roll the dice, and if you have to lose him in the summer, you lose him in the summer, and that frees up a lot of cap space to go after another defenseman if necessary. But I still see them trying to sign Boyle, and if it happens, it'll happen at the end of the year.
Well, no GM, I think, has probably had more frustration in terms of potential versus accomplishment over the past 6 or 7 years than Doug Wilson for what his teams looked like they would be able to do and what they actually ended up doing. And look, they make the playoffs. They're one of the better teams in the league every year. But I think that playoff accomplishment versus expectation hasn't really been met. So he could be looking to buck that trend and be aggressive. Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
All right, Shagar, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, buddy.